Last week we worked with the
12 tribes of Israel. If you want to look on page 11 of your atlas, there's a good map of the 12 tribes. And what I want you to do is turn to somebody next to you. And here are some questions that I'd like for you to consider and answer those between you and someone sitting next to you. These are things we talked about last week that sort of helped you to clarify the distribution of the tribes in the land of Canaan. And if you want to take a look at your notes from last week, these are points right from some of the notes. That's great. And you may be thinking, well, I didn't take notes, and that was your mistake. I did all I could do. So confer with someone next to you, and then we'll talk about those and get rolling here in just a moment. Now, you don't have to write the answers anywhere. You don't have to write them down unless you want to. The sheet that I gave you is for new material, but if you want to write them somewhere, that's fine. And I will say the first two questions, there's a little bit of a twist there when I say, where is Levi and where is Joseph? Because these are the 12 tribes based upon the 12 sons. Levi and Joseph were among the 12 sons of Israel. It's a, nothing tricky if you were here last time. Do what? Thoughtful question. Thank you, Rick. So, questions making sense in light of last week? See your notes? All right, let's talk about some of these then, all of these. So, where's Levi? Oh, that's a great response. What do you mean by that, Elaine?
Well, they didn't inherit certain because all the other people had to give to them.
Okay, they had Levite cities, and they didn't get a tribal allotment with ground because they were the ones who carried out the work in around the tabernacle, later the temple, and of course the priests came from the tribe of Levi, and so they don't get a land allotment. So that tells us something right there. Are there only 11 land allotments? Okay, well that brings us to the next question. Where's Joseph? Because of all the sons of Jacob or Israel, Joseph is very critical, isn't he, in the flow of events of the book of Genesis. So what about Joseph? He gets two, and they are what? Manasseh and Ephraim. And Manasseh is divided between the Transjordan or Eastern Manasseh and then over here and then Ephraim. So Manasseh and Ephraim were the sons of Joseph. They got a tribal land allotment, which does two things. That makes up for the Levites not getting one. There's your number 12. As well as the fact that as we read Genesis, and we'll be getting into Joseph before too long in our congregational readings, it just is appropriate, right? That Joseph, being who he was and doing what he did, that there are two allotments for Joseph. And, you know, we think, well, he doesn't even have his name on it. That's not how they thought back then. The idea that his two sons got two allotments, that's a big deal, okay? So, which two tribes emerge as the dominant ones? Yeah. Ephraim and Judah, exactly. Judah in the south and Ephraim here in the north. And when there is a division, and divided kingdom that we'll reference later today, you can see how close proximity they were. And you can see like Shiloh's in Ephraim, and that's sort of like the main location for a lot of activities, especially in the book of Judges and in 1 Samuel. And the tabernacle is located there, etc. And then Jerusalem, which is there on the border of Benjamin and Judah. And we made this point last week that in the prophets, when Israel is condemned, oftentimes there's just a reference to Ephraim. Oh, Ephraim, you this. Oh, Ephraim, you that. That's really representative of the northern tribes. Considering their location, what will happen to the Transjordan tribes? Yeah, they're going to be vulnerable, aren't they? They're going to be vulnerable. They're going to be more prone to attacks. They're going to be reduced in size. And really, by the time you're getting down toward the period of the writing prophets, they've really been reduced in size. And so just a few points there to remind you of what we talked about last week, and today we're going to move toward talking about the kingdom years. So very glad to have everyone, and appreciate you being here. Daryl, would you lead us in a prayer, and then we'll start looking at this new material, please.
Our God and Father, we thank you for this day. Thank you for time that we have together to study the land and the geography around the nation of Israel, and to learn about your chosen people and your plan throughout the ages. We pray that you'll help us to learn what will be useful to us, and pray that you'll be with Philip as he conducts the class tonight. In Christ's name we pray, amen.
So we're going to be talking about the kingdom years, and by that we're talking about the rule of Saul, David, and Solomon. And you've got a diagram there that I want to start us on this diagram and get us kick-started. And then I'm going to put you at a table at a group, and there's an activity that I want you to do to understand what's happening. One way to look at studying geography of the Bible is another way to tell the story. And so it's a great way to summarize some of the main things that are happening, and that's what we're going to do here in tonight regarding the kingdom years, which takes up a big chunk there in the Old Testament. And really, we're focusing tonight on the United Kingdom. But this starts here with the Judges period. The Judges period follows soon after the conquest. After they take the land of Canaan and they allot the tribes their specific territories, we have this Judges period. And the reason why it's called the Judges period is there would be a judge that God would rise up, and it's not exactly the judge like we think of, although he did lead and make judgments. He was really more of a military commander. And this is a period where the Israelites are very unfaithful to God, and because of that, consistently, not all the time, but consistently unfaithful to God. God was really their king, and that should have been sufficient, but it was not. There is no central government. You have tribal governments. You have sort of a loose tribal government. They're ordered by the law that's been given to them at Sinai with the priests teaching them. And so it's a real unstable period. This is, until you get to the time of the invasion and the captivity, this is the most unstable period in Israel's history after they formed themselves into a nation, an entity. This is when the neighboring peoples invade, raid, take spoils, disrupt things, disrupt agriculture, disrupt trade. And so things are very, again, unstable and very chaotic. And geography plays a role here. Their neighbors close by could easily make runs into Israel and disrupt things, and they did not have a secure buffer around them. And that really explains these maps you're going to look at later on, why these maps took place as they did. And so Israel's very weak and insecure. It was God's long-term plan to provide a king, because Israel's history is tied to the unfolding of the plan to provide a Messiah. And Messiah means anointed one, which was equivalent to king. And so even though Samuel is troubled that Israel wants a king and is demanding a king, God uses this in his plan. In providing them a king, it fulfills what he's ultimately going to do in the Messiah. But the people of Israel are very troubled. Samuel has been the mainstay. He's aged. His sons are got all kinds of problems. The neighboring nations keep threatening Israel. And so Israel feels like they will be more secure if they have a king. And so God allows them to have a king. And of course, that's going to be Saul, then David, then Solomon. So here's what you're going to do. I'm going to put you at a table, and I've got three maps here. And each of them depict the rule of these three kings. One map for Saul, one for David, and one for Solomon. I also have a reading for each of the kingdoms, Saul, David, and Solomon's. This summarizes the territorial characteristics of each of these kingdoms. Was their territory gained or lost? What was happening geographically during the rule of this king, Saul, David, or Solomon? So, what I want you to do is take one king at a time and as a group, read the assigned reading, look at the map, and then what I want you to do, and you have space there, I don't on the slide, but you've got space here on your diagram above, I want you to be describing what's happening from Saul to David to Solomon geographically. And in a way, what's happening geographically is a way to summarize what's happening in these kingdom years. And so, are things becoming more secure, less secure? Are they expanding? What territories are they controlling? Are there gains or there losses? Whatever. So, questions on that? Those instructions. Okay. As you can see, I've got the tables laid out where you're sort of on one side. And I didn't count how many people are here, but we should have enough. If not, I'll go grab a couple more chairs. And I'm just going to let you pick your table, pick your people. Those who are of a certain age, make sure they get the soft seat. Ray ran to one of the folding chairs. He ran right and grabbed one. He didn't want to be thought of as a man of a certain age. You want to come over there? There's a good seat right there. Are you going to sit right there? Okay, good. Very good. All right, how are we doing on seats? Do I need to get more chairs? Should be five at each table. I didn't count how many we have tonight. Oh, it works out just right. Excellent. So take one reading at a time and designate somebody to read it and read about Saul, the summary about the territory related to his kingdom, and then discuss what's happening and summarize on the line above what's happening. Look closely at these maps. Look at the coloration of the maps. The maps are using shaded colors to indicate what's happening. Don't worry about summarizing specific places. Just summarize what's happening. And think about with Saul, if during the judges period these things right here are true, is that changing or staying the same with Saul? So are things staying the same as they were under the judges or with Saul? Are they changing? How are they changing? Don't worry about writing down specific places, but summarize in general what's happening. So in general, what's happening? Is it improving, getting worse? So those countries that keep troubling them, it's all successful in dealing with them. I know we think of Saul, we think of a failed king, and that's appropriate. But in this regard, regarding the territory of Israel and its borders, what's happening under Saul? He is, exactly. That's a good way to put it. And of course, what does that create for Israel? They're subduing the neighboring nations, troubling them. What's happening in Israel? So let the shaded areas teach you what's happening. From map to map, what's happening? From Saul to David to Solomon, what are the colors showing you? Don't get too caught up with the specific places, but just what's happening territorially. Think in terms of writing your summary statements as answers to those questions. One way to do it. Big picture, what's happening under each king? Okay, just another minute or two. We're going to discuss, so wrap up Solomon. All right, let's talk about these three kings and get some of your feedback about what you're seeing. First of all, Saul, no matter where you're sitting, you can see a screen one way or the other. So Saul, how did you summarize what's happening geographically with his kingdom? Back here. Somebody back here at this table. Yeah, okay. Growing influence. Go ahead, keep going. Okay, definitely working together because you got a king. What about the transition out of the judges period? Is any different? Do they still have conflicts with the neighbors? How's that going now? Okay, what'd y'all say back there on Saul? How'd you word it? Would you say he's successful in securing them? Yeah. We can't lose sight of that regarding Saul. You know, we just automatically want to think, you know, the things we do about him, and that's true. It's like sometimes we just think of the one thing about Thomas. You know, he wanted to see Jesus, he doubted. Okay, that kind of thing. There's so much more going on. And with Saul, he actually is a very successful leader, especially in securing them from all those threats during the judges period. He is very successful at that. And it's actually understanding that that helps you to understand the tragedy of his rebellion to God, because it was, you know, potential wasted in some ways. Okay, right here in the middle, what did y'all say about David? How's the trajectory going now with David as king? What's happening right here?
It's going up really fast because he's taking his influence all the way to the Euphrates border.
Okay. Now, when you're saying he's taking his influence, what is he doing? Okay.
Eastern kingdoms have been subdued. Philistines have been subdued, which Saul couldn't do. And now Syria is subdued, and he's got tribute all the way to Euphrates River.
Okay, by invading these lands outside of Israel, and you said something, he whipped up on them or something, I forgot how you put it, but they're paying him tribute. What's happening to all the lands around Israel now?
Starting to fear Israel.
They're fearing David, they're fearing Israel, and as a result, are there threats from those areas? No, okay. It's a buffer zone. Why did the Soviet Union take Poland and Czechoslovakia and Romania after the Second World War? They were tired of being invaded. You remember that? I mean, not you weren't there in 1940. But it's a buffer zone. Those Eastern Bloc nations were all buffer zones. People do that all the time. And David is creating a buffer zone. He's subduing those nations. And think about it. There are references to the south, to the east, and to the north. Of course, he doesn't subdue the nations to the west, right? Why? Because there are none. Very good. Okay, can slip that one by you. Okay, what did y'all say about David? How did you put it?
Well, we said he expanded east, southwest, and northwest, and just kind of solidified the kingdom, you know, united the kingdom.
Yeah, that's a good word, solidify. You can't really solidify something if it's threatened. So in a way, Saul removed the immediate threat of the neighbors. David, by creating these buffer zones, prevented any future threat, at least in his lifetime, any kind of significant threat. David had more problems internally than he had externally, as far as the security of the kingdom goes. Okay? All right, Solomon over here, this group over here. What's happening with Solomon?
Well, Solomon had the government was more centralized, but then there was the temple, which became the focal point spiritually for them.
Excellent.
And then we had said this before on David, that the tribes were just all becoming into this one nation of Israel. You were losing the tribal boundaries. There was a lot of security, but economically they were becoming richer because of the tributes from all the nations around.
Okay. More on this in a second, but you could say that under David, they expanded militarily and secured the areas around them. With Solomon, they expanded economically. And we still see this played out in our world today. It's just as important to use economics to make yourself secure as it is to use a military. It's a whole lot cleaner, okay? And less bloodshed. And Solomon is doing that. And the fact that his trade is so expansive says something about his organization, what kind of administrator that he is, as well as things were secure. Economics get disrupted when there are wars all the time. And so the fact that all this is secure now, goods can flow more easily. And I do want to say this, I've said this other times, because sometimes you'll run into somebody saying this and it's not true. Solomon is the zenith, okay? They are strongest, and you had a text there where it read that they were numerous and even happy, okay? Even talks about them being happy. But even under Solomon, Israel was never a world power. I don't know if there were such things as world power back then because things were so segmented. It was a regional power at best. But under Solomon and somewhat under David, they were a considerable regional power. Nobody from Egypt to the Tigris-Euphrates River Valley was a threat to them under David and Solomon. What do you want to add, Ray?
Joe Dennis noted that they were in charge of the two interstates.
Okay. Yes, excellent, Joe. What are the two interstates, Joe?
Way of the Sea and the King's Highway.
Okay, King's Highway goes along that eastern plateau on the eastern side of the Jordan River Valley, and then that coastal plain was that main thoroughfare there between Israel proper and the coast. And you're exactly right. Under David and especially under Solomon, they controlled that. And that's huge. Absolutely. It's big. Okay. Now, we're feeling good about this, aren't we? Well, these kings are followed by a period of time in the Old Testament that we call what?
Divided Kingdom.
The Divided Kingdom. And that, just that name right there says a lot. After Solomon, they divided between Israel to the north, the northern tribes from Ephraim north, and then Judah in the south, which included Benjamin. And then long ago, Simeon had been absorbed by Judah. So I want you to think about this diagram right here. And even the fact that the position of the arrow goes up and then it goes down. So what would you expect to happen geographically in the divided kingdom and use the judges period as a reference point? What, Andrew? They're going to start losing territory. They get weaker. They decline in strength internally, their organization. They decline in strength economically and militarily to some extent, and they have shrinking territory. Now, I want you to understand something, and this is very common. Sometimes it takes a long time to build something up, and sometimes it takes a long time for it to unravel. It took a long time for this to unravel. It was not like from Rehoboam and Jeroboam on, that it was like this, okay? It's more like this. It's a roller coaster, but the trajectory was down. Militarily, economically, stability-wise, they get weaker and weaker, and that just stands to reason they're going to lose territory because that buffer is going to weaken. And first it's Syria, then Assyria, and then the Babylonians. And this is when Manasseh and Gad and Reuben really get damaged by the neighbors. Do you have your hand up, Neil?
I think of the idea of a house divided cannot stand.
Right. That's the principle, isn't it? Yes.
And related to that, all that downward was, you know, the economically and military, all is related to the spiritual condition.
Exactly. Okay, great way to put a bow on this. Why did this happen? Why were they able to build this kind of nation for a while? Because God had blessed them. It was according to his plan. And when they morally and spiritually grow weak and rebellious, then it's going to fall apart. And I will say, that is not true with other nations in world history, including contemporary times. A nation doesn't become strong because they're moral and spiritual. Explain Rome. Okay? And I, you know, we can come up with another 1,000 examples. So, but Israel was tied to its moral and spiritual condition. That's why the judges' period was the way it was. Okay. Y'all did a great job on that. Very well done. Okay. So you got a map on the back side. I want to give you a taste of some places during the kingdom years. I think this sort of just puts a little icing on the cake for us tonight. I want to note some things that happened in the kingdom years and tie them to some specific places and even look at some photos. And so if you want to write some of this on that back side map, then that's great. First of all, Philistia. Let's talk about Philistia. Philistia is really a region of city-states. There are different ones there talked about, Ekron and so forth, Ashdod. And the Philistines, their name in ancient times was the seafaring people. They had actually migrated from what we know today as Greece and Turkey and migrated down the Mediterranean and lodged there. See, they're on the coast. And when the Israelites came in, they were there and there was immediate friction. Okay? And especially since Israel really took the hill country and this coastal area was not secure until you get really into David. And so there are two areas, as you're reading through the kingdom years, and we'll do that in a few months, there are two areas where the Philistines will attack. One is right into the heartland of Judah. There are some valleys in here, and we'll note one in a moment, and the Philistines will challenge them. So when you're reading in the book of Judges and in the book of 1 Samuel about the Philistines and the Israelites, that's where they're doing battle. But they also would come up and attack through the Jezreel Valley. You can see where the mountains there are playing out, and there's a valley there. There was another major passageway. A lot of agriculture there. We've talked about the Jezreel Valley or the Megiddo Valley. And the Philistines would invade there. We'll note a major battle here in just a moment. So, talking about the Philistines invading in the central part of Judah, one big event happened in a valley called Valley of Elah. And it is a turning point regarding transitioning from Saul being king to David being king. What event can you think of happened in a valley that included Saul and David and the big fella? Okay, the Goliath thing, okay? So the Valley of Elah is right in here, and the way the valley was situated, the Israelites were on one side on the hill, the Philistines on the other. And they did this in ancient times. Why send out thousands of men on the battlefield, have all kinds of people wounded and killed? Is there a more expedient way to do this? Well, this was not all the time, but this happened in ancient times, that one side, especially if the units were fairly small, they would send out one champion, and the other side would send out a champion. They'd fight it out, and whatever they were fighting over, that settled it. It's pretty clean, right? It's like a wrestling match or something, a cage match. And so this is what Goliath is doing. He's coming into the valley. He's challenging Israel every day. Everybody's too scared to take him on. David takes him on. Of course, where does David get his ammunition? He actually gets it from a dry bed, most likely. Because through this valley is a wadi. What's a wadi? We talked about it a few weeks ago. That's right. It's a dry bed where there has been a stream before it. The dry time of the year, it dries out. So he gets his 5 stones, and you know how the story ends. Okay? And the giant came tumbling down. And the Philistines try to flee out of here, and the Israelites chase them down. And so this part of the Judean hill country doesn't have a lot of valleys, but this has one, really a nice one there. And so it was a great platform for this battle and for everybody to see this go down. Now, speaking of the transition from David to Saul, you know what happens, right? At first, they have this incredible good relationship, but then the relationship sours because why?
Jealousy.
Saul's jealousy. So David has to go on the lam. He becomes the champion of the Israelite army, but he has to go on the run and hide out. And there's different places he goes, But the text talks about the wilderness over and over and over. And this is really the wilderness. This is where the mountains are the most rugged between what will be known later on as Jerusalem and the Dead Sea or the Jordan Rift Valley. And we read about him going to the strongholds of En-Gedi on one particular occasion. And this is right in here. And these are basically the mountains and the cliffs that border the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea drops off drastically. That's why it's so far below sea level. And so there are these cliffs there. And this is what they look like. And why do I show you this picture? What happened in En-Gedi regarding David and Saul chasing him? It's the cave incident. David and his men are hiding out in a cave. Saul comes in to relieve himself in the cave. David could have killed him. He doesn't. But when he goes outside, he follows him and he confronts him. And so this happens at En-Gedi. And this is in this really rugged area. And it's to this day filled with caves. And so it's just, the Bible is so reliable in its record. It really is. Well, what finally does Saul in is a major battle with the Philistines. Of course, what really did him in was his disobedience to God. But this is that Jezreel Valley. You can see why it's a great place to move goods and armies through. Great for agriculture. It's bordered by hills on each side. And so the Philistines had invaded there. Saul, his son Jonathan, their forces engaged the Philistines here in the Jezreel Valley. And the Philistines rout them. And Saul and many of his men run up on this hill right here called Gilboa. They chase them up the Mount Gilboa, and that's where Saul is killed. Actually, they don't kill him. What? That's right, he kills himself. Okay? He wants his armor bearer to kill him, but he won't, so he kills himself. Falls on his sword. And so you can understand, the valley of the Jezreel Valley or the Megiddo Valley is so, it's just one of those special places in the Old Testament where these events take place. So that's why in the Revelation, when the Holy Spirit uses a symbolic battle and battle point, it calls it Armageddon, Megiddo. Okay, so that's what happens there. And then, this is Solomon's reign, and I want to look at these here. Les, can you read this text here in just a moment? 2 Chronicles 2, 3, and 4, and 11 to 16. And I'm going to get someone else here. Earl, I'm going to get you to read that one right there in a moment. 1 Kings 9, 26, 28. So if you just go to 1 Kings 9, you'll be ready to go. So I'm going to back up here. Okay. So Solomon is ruling. We've already noted tonight about Solomon's economic trade and how expansive it was. Can you read that for us, Les? This is about Hiram, who's king of Tyre. David had worked with him in supplying things to build for building projects. Now look what happens.
2 Chronicles 2, 3 and 4. Is that right? Okay. Then Solomon sent to Hiram, king of Tyre, saying, "As you have dealt with David my father, and sent him cedars to build himself a house to dwell in, so deal with me. Behold, I am building a temple for the name of the Lord my God, to dedicate it to him, to burn before him sweet incense for the continual showbread, for the burnt offering morning and evening, on the Sabbaths, on the new moons, and on the set feast of the Lord our God. This is an ordinance forever to Israel."
So in this letter, David is saying, I'm going to build this great Solomon said, I'm going to build this great house. I'm going to need this, this, and this. Hiram writes back and praises him and says, you know, blessed be you and all this kind of stuff. Read verse 16. Just drop to verse 16, please, Les.
"And we will cut wood from Lebanon as much as you need. We will bring it to you in wraps by the sea to Joppa, and you will carry it up to Jerusalem."
Thank you. Remember we said the other day that Israel does not have a lot of natural harbors? It's got this smooth coastline. Well, there is one place where there is just this crook in the land formation. It's Joppa. Here's what happens. Hiram had access to great forests, all kinds of skilled artisans. He brings the wood down the coast, floating it. He supplies wood as well as other supplies and a lot of artisans. And as you can see, that's not that far to work their way into Jerusalem where the temple is going to be built. Now, it's really interesting. You may be wondering, where is Joppa today? I can tell by the look on your faces, it's just killing you to know where it's at today. This is a modern map of Israel. Look here, Tel Aviv, Jaffa. Joppa to Tel Aviv is like Weaverville to Asheville, okay, or Candler to Asheville, okay? And so this map has it all as one. As you can see, there's just a little bit of an outcrop of land right there. And over the years, especially in recent times, Israel's made it a better harbor. But this is where the modern state of Israel has its capital. This is really the front door for Israel. This is where a lot of their trade comes in, etc. And by the way, there's Gaza. So interesting, isn't it? The Philistines versus the Israelites, and now the Gazans and the Israelites. Okay, and that's been a whole bloody, terrible thing. But it's really Tel Aviv is where Joppa is, because it's the best place to bring things in off the ocean, and off the sea. And you see that there with Solomon. And then there's this right here. So, Earl, read verse 26 and 28.
First Kings 9.
King Solomon also built a fleet of ships in Ezion-Geber, which is near Eloth, on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. And Hiram sent his servants with a fleet of sailors who knew the sea, along with the servants of Solomon. They went to Ophir and took 420 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon.
Okay. If you skip down to 10:22, as you're turning over there, Earl, what happens here is that Solomon comes down. There was some community here at this finger of the Red Sea. It's known today as the Gulf of Aqaba. And he creates a port city for the purpose of facilitating his trade. And then you see, and he's still using Hiram, because Hiram's of the people from Tyre, and they're the Phoenicians, and they're the seagoing people. So 10:22 says what?
Well, the king had at sea the ships of Tarshish with the ships of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the ships of Tarshish came bringing gold and silver, ivory, and apes and peacocks.
Okay. Tarshish, Jonah. It's on the other side of the Mediterranean Sea. It was a Phoenician colony. It was the other anchor on the Mediterranean. You have the Phoenicians on the east side, and you have Carthage on the west side, and it's all run by the Phoenicians. They're running the sea trade on the Mediterranean. Somehow or another, in conjunction with Solomon, they create a fleet of ships down here, probably had to go down there and build them. There's no way to get there by sea, except going around Africa. Nobody did that back then. And this becomes a port, and either out of this port or out of Joppa, you saw the things listed. Now, it talks about Ophir. It's hard to know exactly where Ophir is. Sorry, the map didn't show up better. It is believed to be either here in Africa or here on the Arabian Peninsula. Gold from Ophir. Remember the Queen of Sheba who came to Solomon? Sheba is most likely on this southwestern part of the Arabian Peninsula. And you see the list there? The list was not olive oil, wheat. It was gold, ivory, peacocks, apes. What's he bringing in? Exotic things, luxury goods. You see that? Now, gold and silver is a commodity. You see the wealth, where it's going? And so Solomon's influence is extensive, and we know that about his wisdom and things such as that. Okay? So this is the apex. This is the territorial apex, militarily and economically, of Israel. And the rest of the Old Testament, it's a downhill slide. and tragic. Okay, thank you all very much. That's it.